FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 2619. Got through with an amazing January. Stock prices rebounded. Happy days are here again. State of the Union, everything's fine. Oil production booming. Hey, first and foremost, as always, be a part of the show. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. If you got something to say important, we want to hear from you for sure. So we see oil production hitting all-time record levels in the United States, U.S. largest energy producer in the world. And this is having an effect on oil prices for sure. Well, our good friend D. Carter, a noted financial advisor from the great state of Texas who inhabits an area in close proximity to the legendary Permian Basin where so much of the oil boom has taken place, is with us now to discuss. And Dee, how much longer can this go on? I've been listening to so-called experts my entire life, and you might have a year or two on me, but they've been saying we're running out of oil. We're running out. The U.S. Basically is going to be running. The economy will be running on fumes. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've been hearing that same thing, Kerry, for about the last 40 years, and I've lived in the Permian Basin nearly all of my life. Not yet, but I'm working on it. But the bottom line is we just discovered within the last month a new field here in West Texas in the Permian Basin that nearly doubles the size of the current what we thought we had underground. We now have found another field that makes us the second largest oil-producing area in the world, right behind the Saudi Arabian production. As you mentioned earlier, and you're absolutely correct, the United States is now the number one producer of oil, and it's primarily because of the Permian Basin. Are we running out? Heavens no. We got oil down there that we didn't even know about. We have methods of extraction and discovery now that we didn't have 10 years ago. It's amazing what they've come up with, what the engineers are doing and what the scientists are doing in order to find the oil. There's no such thing as a dry hole anymore. When I was a kid, we had dry holes. We don't have them anymore. When they drill now, they find it. They know where it is. They know how to get to it. They know how to extract it efficiently. So, no, we're not going to run out of oil anytime soon. You and I are going to be long gone and not even remembered by the time if they ever run out of oil anyway.
Well, I hope somebody remembers us, but that is the reality of the situation. But when you look at, when you're talking about the way wells used to be drilled, you had a guy with a divining rod and it was like a wishbone looking stick, and he'd go out to a place where they thought there was oil, and then he would wait for Gaia, Mother Earth, to make his arms start shaking and says, "It's there, it's there, it's there." And I'll tell you a funny story about that. Where I lived in Westchester County, there was a guy, and he had part Indian blood, Native American, indigenous peoples, whatever you want to call it. And when they couldn't find water, because they had to drill through the bedrock, generally had to drill down 200 feet, they would call this guy in, and he had a divining rod, and he would invariably find water. So I don't know if he was that successful with oil, but like you said, dry holes, you know, it's less than 1 in 10 now, and they're not really dry holes. There's oil there almost always, but it's not optimal. And they realize that there's a better place to drill. So it becomes effectively a test hole. There are no dry holes. Like you said, the seismology, the satellite imagery that's used, and the other technological ways to test soil formations and geological formations have kind of made the dry hole obsolete. Now, initially, they said that, look, the oil, these wells don't last as long as regular wells, regular vertically drilled oil wells, and they're all going to run out in, you know, another couple of years. North Dakota won't be producing hardly any oil. And yet, North Dakota is booming. It's not particularly a place where I want to be. So it's like now, if you're in North Dakota right now, you fully believe that hell has frozen over.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. They can't even bury their dead in North Dakota until April. So that'll give you some idea how hard the ground is. But you're exactly right, Kerry. The bottom line is that the methods that they're using for extraction and discovery now are so efficient and so well honed that they don't really have a problem. You see the horizontal wells. We have one that was recently drilled just right on the outskirts of Midland, literally right across the interstate. And it's going to have six wells there. They're going to have six pumps going at the same time, all sitting side by side. They were going around the city of Midland and buying up royalties because they're going to be drilling down and going horizontally underneath the city. And people that had even a lot in town, I had people came to my door and knocked on my door and said, would you like to sell your oil royalties? And, of course, I said, no, I'll be glad to lease them to you, but I'm not going to sell them to you. They don't want to lease them. They want to buy them because the lease expires after 90 days if there's nothing done. So it's amazing what's going on. No, are we going to run out? No, and not in our lifetime. The nasty oil companies are going to be still doing a lot of business in West Texas and across the world, actually, for the foreseeable future. I don't see any running out. Even though the wells will go down in capacity and they will go down in production, they will still be producing at a level, a certain level, maybe 10 to 12 barrels a day. But even that 10 to 12 barrels a day at $50 a barrel is enough to for the companies to continue the production and to continue to service the wells. So, no, we're not going to run out of oil anytime soon.
No, my belief too. I've always thought they were wrong, and for a number of reasons that we don't need to get into in this interview. So, what does this mean for the country? What's it mean for world oil standards of living and investing?
Well, I really think that one of the things that I look at nearly every day is someone comes in and says, should I be investing in oil companies or in oil? Most of my clients are investing in what they call the wildcatters or the local small producers. And some of those are, by the way, are not that small. We have some very large independents here that are not the Exxons and the Chevrons. But these companies are all stock owned. And by the way, that's not a bad investment. I think that in the way the oil companies are going, the way the prices are going, that's not a bad investment for your client if they are willing to take the risk. It's a risky investment, no question about it. But most investments that you get into the stock market are just exactly that anyway. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's about a 9, I would think. But at the same time, if you're young enough and you can afford to take the chances, because if the prices of oil go down, and our problem right now, Kerry, is not so much that we have a lot of oil. It's getting the oil to the refineries. It's getting the oil to the places where it can be turned into the things that every one of us use every day. I'm sitting here in my office looking at half a dozen items just in front of me. They're all petroleum-based products. Everything you've got made of plastic, every button that you button every day, every zipper that you zip, every nylon, everything you do basically has got some petroleum. The phone I've got in my hand is plastic. It's made of petroleum products. So we're not going to get away from it. What we people need to realize is that we're learning better how to use it and better how to make the oil into things that we need to use every day. And so I'm seeing a continued, and we have some congressmen that are saying we have this young lady that bless her heart, and we can say that in Texas. You can say bless your heart, and it means a whole lot.
It's
you
legal.
Can say anything you want to after that. But this lady says we're going to run out of oil. We're going to be the oil. We need to get rid of the oil business. Well, hon, I got to tell you, if you get rid of the oil business, you're going to get rid of a lot of products that you use every day.
Yeah, I laugh at that. That's like, you know, oh, we need a Green New Deal. Let's have a let's have a black gold New Deal. All right.
Absolutely.
Where we really exploit. And this is something that is directly attributable to Trump. Increased leasing, increased approval of oil pipelines. You know what? I'll know we've really turned the corner when we actually build a new refinery in this country. First time in 35, 40 years.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that because of the tax situations, it's been almost impossible to do. But the Trump administration has eased those tax regulations and requirements, and I think you're going to see some startups and some new refineries within the next few years. And in fact, the sooner than that. We have reversed one of our pipelines from West Texas to the Gulf Coast already. Correct. That was bringing things here, but it's now pumping oil back down to the refinery in Houston. And we're making a new, Chevron is doing a new pipeline from West Texas, from the Permian Basin, to the refineries in the Houston area, a 36-inch pipeline, and it'll be completed in about 2 years. So that's going to make a huge amount of difference in the price of oil, I think, and the way it can be gotten to the refinery as far as that's necessary. Our biggest problem is that a lot of the companies or the countries that Venezuela, for example, we've stopped their oil flow, basically.
Yes.
Somebody's got to pick up the difference, and it'll be the United States.
Yeah, well, Venezuela's oil, it's a peculiar story there.
It is.
It's heavy sour crude, and there's refineries in the U.S. that are set up only for Venezuelan crude. So they're kind of getting the shaft there because it's a major deal to convert those refineries over to light sweet, which is what we're getting from the Permian and from North Dakota. And in a lot of ways, it's better. It's a whole involved chemical process. That
it really is.
Yeah. But suffice it to say, it's the Venezuela, I think, was sitting on the largest or second largest reserves in the world. The benefits of socialism is that it spreads misery around pretty much equally. And they are, you know, they're. Since they nationalized the, I think it was Exxon, maybe Chevron also. I know it was Exxon. Since they nationalized their operations, and since they nationalized the oil company, their production has gone straight line down. So this is a stark contrast to letting capitalism work its magic in the U.S., where since Trump effectively deregulated the oil industry, we've seen the opposite occur.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Egypt is on the verge, once again, becoming a world-renowned gold producer. The Golden Age is being rediscovered. For millennia, ancient Egyptian kingdoms prospered from unparalleled riches. Pharaohs built their empires and flaunted their abundant wealth that was made possible by the country's resource-rich gold deposits. Despite this rich history, modern Egypt remains one of the most underdeveloped gold mining countries in the world. Aton Resources is at the center of the modern Egyptian mining world, diligently working both as the only public exploration company in Egypt today and as the advocate for mining reform with the Egyptian government. However, those that arrive early, like Aton, will reap the best rewards. Aton's discovery of the legendary lost mountain of gold at Rudruin and its current aggressive drilling program there could potentially reap those rewards. Aton Resources is focused on its 100% owned Abu Marwat concession in the Arabian Nubian Shield, located 200 kilometers north of Sentimen Sakkari's world-class gold mine. Aton possesses first-mover advantage in the underfollowed jurisdiction of Egypt, which is currently undergoing mining reform. To stay on top of Aton's latest drill results and news, go to AtonResources.com. Aton trades on the Toronto Venture Exchange under the ticker AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Exactly. And I remember when the former president made the statement that what's he going to do? How's he going to do this and increase oil production? Does he have a magic wand? Well, obviously he does, because we have seen this thing turn around in 2 years, which is really a very short period of time for a turnaround of this kind of industry. From where we were dependent upon a lot of companies, we were importing more than we were exporting, and now we're the number one exporter in the world. So things have totally turned around based on the deregulation of the oil companies and the taxation situation. So we're sitting on a potential long-term boom, if you will. I don't like the word boom and bust, because boom and bust in West Texas gives you a really bad taste in your mouth. But we're looking at a long-term benefit of the oil business and the petroleum industry that will affect the entire world and have a great effect on the United States. I think the economy will be boosted by what we're doing out here. People all over the United States are going to realize that, and they're going to realize the benefits from it, as long as we have a group of people in in Washington, D.C. that will let us do our job and let us do the things that we do best.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we never even, you know, the oil boom, all we hear about is oil, but the effect on natural gas.
Absolutely.
Is even more so than oil. And a lot of the energy we get comes from natural gas liquids. It's millions of barrels a day. Nobody ever talks about that. You notice that? They really don't.
And I think the reason, Kerry, is because they don't realize that for years, all they could do was flare that gas off. We didn't have a way to extract it. Now we have methods for extracting the gas. And the natural gas has become a very viable fuel product. And we're turning it into a lot of different things. And it can be compressed. It can be liquefied. There's things you can do with natural gas.
Propane.
That are unbelievable. We couldn't do that 20 years ago.
No, totally could not. And the fracking with natural gas, especially the wet gas, that's what we're really talking about. The dry gas, it's just, there's so many shut in dry gas oil wells, natural gas wells, because there's just not enough money.
Exactly. The price isn't high enough to make it worth your while. And some of that gas that comes out has been inserted, actually, into the oil areas to make the oil come up.
Yes.
And it cannot be used again. It can't be reinserted, and it can't be used for natural gas. So it is flared off, and we flare that off. But that's not a great percentage of what you see as far as the flaring is concerned. What's going on in the industry is an absolutely amazing situation to sit here where I am and be able to watch the industry grow and the young people that are getting involved with it, the excitement of what's happening. It's great.
It is. And, you know, the whole thing of that oil is somehow obsolete and, you know, yesterday's thing, you know, even if you're not using it, let's say everyone does switch to batteries, battery operated cars. They're not electric cars. They're battery operated.
That's exactly right.
Even if everyone did that tomorrow, we still have an overwhelming need because we still have to heat places. A lot of oil and natural gas goes to heating and petrochemicals, plastics, ethylene, things like that. So to think that we're just going to be rid of the petroleum industry and everything's going to be great, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, maybe one day in our lifetimes, although I doubt it, we'll see fully battery operated transportation fleets all over the place. But until that day happens, we're stuck with oil, and we better just accept it.
We better accept it. We better understand what it's for and how it's worked and how it works for the benefit and actually the good of the country. And it makes our economy much more strong than it would have been otherwise. And don't forget that the batteries that those cars run on, they're made from petroleum products. So you're going to have something there, even with the battery-driven automobiles.
Of course. Hey, just one other point here that I'd like to make, and it's off the topic totally, but I'm writing an article on it right now because I predicted this 2 years ago when the tax bill passed. I don't know if you caught it, but Governor Cuomo of New York is crying the fact that the state has a $2.3 billion deficit because of the new tax law, because people are moving out, high income tax earners, because you can't deduct your state and local taxes, particularly income taxes. But in New York, you could be paying $25,000 to $50,000 in real estate taxes annually. I'm sure you've noticed it in Texas. We've certainly seen it here in Florida, where the population's up 5% in the last 2 or 3 years. Same thing's happening in Texas, isn't it?
Absolutely. We have I think there's an open line between here and California. We're getting a lot of, because California's running into the same problems that New York State is having because of the taxation burden. A lot of people are moving out of those states and moving to places that, number one, has no state income tax, and Texas and Florida are two of those, and we're proud of that. But we're seeing people moving into our areas. Midland, for example, was about 101,000 population, small city at the last census, which is 9 years ago. Today, Midland is probably close to 180,000. That we've outstripped our ability to really maintain that sort of thing. But it's because a lot of people are moving in here. I was driving down the street the other day and counted 7 different license plates from 7 outside states.
Yeah, same.
That'll give you some idea of how they're coming here.
Yeah, it's always like that in Florida because we have vacationers from all over the country and the world. But same thing is happening here. I think inward migration to Florida is the highest in the country. And, you know, it was 4 years ago, we had 19.8 million people. Now there's 21.5 million or 22.
Right.
They don't even know. They can't really keep track of it. And every major highway in the state of Florida is under construction for expansion, or it's going to be shortly. And I'm sure it's the same thing in Texas.
Absolutely. You can't drive from Midland to Dallas, which I've done lately twice in the last 2 weeks. There's construction. It's a 350-mile stretch of I-20, and there's construction on at least a half a dozen places between here and Dallas. It's constant because of the traffic load that these highways are now taking. It's almost bumper to bumper from here to Dallas at any given time, even in the middle of the night. There's so many trucks on the highway. There's so many people moving. The country is moving, and it's moving to the south and to the southwest and to the southeast. A lot of the people in the north, you mentioned North Dakotans, they'd love to get out of there, I think. But they're all moving down to Texas, to Florida, and to places that the tax burdens are lighter, where they don't have those harsh winters. There's just so many. I'll be in your lovely state in about 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to being in Fort Lauderdale for a couple of days. But it's a great place to live. It's a great place to be right now in the South. And we're looking for it. The problem is we need to stem some of this growth some way because we're having so many people moving in. We can't keep up with it because of the infrastructure.
Very, very true. And the blue states, the high tax states, but I repeat myself, are really sowing the seeds of their own destruction.
And, exactly.
And they have to rationalize their economies. They're living in the early 1900s where forced unionization and all of these labor laws that have been passed to favor government workers, it's all made the cost of living there so high, not to mention the welfare state and everything else. So things have got to change if they want to stay relevant and they want to become economically vibrant again. But with this current crop of nut jobs taking over the Democratic Party, when Howie Schultz starts looking sane, like a saint, like a reasonable man, you know that your party has jumped the shark, D.
That's a great observation, and it's humorous, but it's true. Now some of the guys that were in the Democrat Party that we thought were wild radicals are all of a sudden almost insane in comparison to the new batch that have just come in.
Yeah. Oh, it's madness. So anyway, we don't get into politics because this is a family show, but
right.
But we can't help but comment upon the madness that has collectively seized the political system and made it very difficult to govern. But I think, D, like you, I am an optimist, and I do believe in the future of the country if we can get our act together, get a handle on the debt. We have a lot of problems, but we've had problems before, and we've managed to solve them. Hopefully that spirit, that American spirit, is still with us, and problem solving and leading the world in problem solving, because that's what progress is about. Progress doesn't
happen.
That's
what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do. I'm just hoping that cooler heads will prevail. They will take a look at what's happened in the past and take a look at the 40 countries, for example, that have tried socialism, all of which failed, and realize that we've got the best system in the world, and it will help our people. I deal in retirement planning every day, and I base my entire program on positive thoughts and where we're heading, and I think that I'm going to continue to do that in the hopes that, as you so well put it, the nut jobs don't take over the loony farm.
Yeah,
here.
The inmates don't take over the asylum. Sometimes you don't know, you know, sometimes you got to wonder. Anyways, we got to run. D, just tell us, where do we find you on the web? How do we connect with you?
If you can go to www.dcarterfinancial.com. fixedincomecouncil.com. That's a long one, but that's where my website is, and you'll be glad to take a look at that and see what we're doing with retirement planning situation. You also get a copy of my new book. It's still listed there, and it's doing quite well, by the way.
Excellent.
So we're real proud of that.
That's very good to hear. Hey, we will, as always, you will find a link in the show notes to Dee's site. Don't forget, if you want to be a part of the show, if anything we talked about resonated with you, please email us, kl@carrielutz.com. If you're listening to the show on YouTube or on the regular podcast channels, please subscribe, like, and share. It kind of sounds like a mechanical marching order. Subscribe, like, share. Subscribe, like, share. Just I'm blaring that into your head, burning it in there, because it really helps the show, helps me when you do that, helps get the word out, helps keep and get people informed about what's really happening in the country and the world. Dee, always a pleasure. We will talk to you again real soon.
I look forward to hearing from you again soon, Carrie. Thanks. Have a great day.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.